said Vega. Call your husband. Mrs. Linsome blinked slowly and brought her gaze back up to Vega's. Even if I called, press wouldn't pick up right now, she said. Focus, said Perry in her head. If Nell's dead, she's already dead. She's not the body you're supposed to bring home. One thing, and then another. So tell me where Kylie is, and we can get this over with, said Vega, very quiet. Mrs. Linsome rolled her shoulders back.
It's not as if I can run away from you, Miss Vega. You don't have to keep the gun on me.
I'd prefer to, said Vega. She was so close, she could see the light glint off the small diamond studs in Mrs. Linsome's ears. Well, then, she said, lifting her chin, looking just above the gun, like she was peering over a hedge.
Like I said, none of this was planned. The first time was an accident, really.
I'd been married to Press for 5 years before he told me.
I remember the day, too. It was when we got home from the 20-week sonogram, when we found out Cole was a girl.
She looked drunk with the joy of the memory, smiling broadly. Then, suddenly, the smile evaporated, and she continued. When we got home, he told me that sometimes he had these feelings, urges he was ashamed of, and he was afraid that eventually he might not be able to control them, now that he knew we were having a girl. Vega started to feel the sweat between her fingers on her palms. She didn't move. Didn't want to give the impression the gun could slip.
I told him he was the strongest man I'd ever met. And together, he and I could beat this, said Mrs. Linsome, looking proud and weathered by her suffering. Then, when Cole was 5, we lived in Hershey then, one night Press came to me and broke down. Said he didn't know what to do. He didn't think he could fight it anymore. He wept in my lap. Can you imagine?
She said to Vega.
Can you imagine what it took for him to admit that? A man like that?
She said, awe in her voice. Vega didn't answer. Kept the gun steady on the left eye.
I told him we'd figure something out, but honestly, I didn't know what I was going to do. And then, this is where fate came in, she said, excited to share her story, like they were two girls chatting over lattes. The very next day, we were on our way back from the pool, and there was Ashley in the parking lot. I guess she'd gone to the vending machines and gotten turned around. She knew us from ballet class, and I was like a celebrity to those girls. The piano player, Mrs. L, they called me. And she...
She paused, touched her finger to her lips, eyes distant.
She asked to come over. She asked, said Mrs. Linsome in disbelief. So she came with us. At home, she and Cole played for a while, and then they both fell asleep. By then, Ashley's parents were calling everyone they knew. They hadn't called the police yet. No one had seen her get into my car, and I thought, can it be this easy? She gave Vega a shy smile. Yes, it can be.
She seemed to be elsewhere while she recited the rest, channeling the events like a medium in a trance.
We kept her for 2 days. At first we thought we'd give her back, We knew that would be the end for us. But then I thought, what if we can have a normal life after all? What if Press can live without having to go through the burden that has been placed on him? What if this got it out of his system, like an antibiotic? My husband and my daughter could be fine. Forever. And all I had to do was kill a little girl. Vega started breathing faster, stared into Mrs. Linsome's clear eyes. Of course, as you know, it wasn't forever. 2 years later, he came to me again. Cole had stopped taking ballet, so I volunteered at a different studio, where I met Sydney. I planned a bit more, rented a car, put my hair up under a cap. Some people are not as careful with their children as they should be. An 8-year-old walking home by herself. She shook her head and sighed. And now, Kylie. Vega straightened her arm, fought the twitches in the tendons. You can think whatever you want of me, said Mrs. Linsome. But I opened those accounts and paid those people anonymously because I did feel bad. I do feel bad. I'm a mother, too. And none of them seem to have a problem with that. The money? Even if they didn't exactly realize what it was for. Vega started to shake. She knew something would have to happen soon. She would have to either drop the gun or shoot. You don't have kids, Miss Vega, so I don't expect you to understand this, said Mrs. Linsome. But if someone tells you, either your child gets hurt or my child gets hurt, your child is raped or my child is raped, your child dies or my child dies, you will always pick the other child to die. Always. If you ever become a mother, you'll find that out. Vega's mouth was dry as bread, but she spoke anyway. Lady, you're a fucking psycho. She came forward and grabbed Mrs. Linsome by the hair with one hand, pressed the nose of the gun into her eye socket. Mrs. Linsome gave a grunt of surprise, raised her hands instinctually to protect the rest of her face as if that might help her. Vega took deep breaths and imagined the pull and release. The recoil would push her back, maybe knock her to the floor since her arm was so shaky. Mrs. Linsome had a small skull. The round would blast the back of it open easily and leave the muddy cavity that would have been her eye. She tried to imagine how she would feel. She wasn't thinking about Cap and Nell, Jamie Brandt, her mother, the world. She'd never had to kill anyone before. All her years working with Perry and freelancing, she'd done a lot of injuring. Hit arms and knees like she did with Dina Mocht. Broken fingers and smashed knuckles. Bitten ears, and slammed the grip of her gun into cheeks and jaws and temples. Mrs. Linsome's hair was feathery soft and a blend of blonde shades so exact they seemed to run in a perfect pattern across her scalp. Light, lighter, lightest. Vega yanked Mrs. Linsome's head closer to her. Mrs. Linsome's hands flying up to Vega's, digging into her skin. But she wasn't as strong as Vega. No amount of Pilates could level the field. Vega jammed the Springfield into the hollow of her eye so it hurt. It was not nestled. There was no nestling. Mrs. Linsome cried out at the shock of it.
2545!
She yelled. What? Said Vega. Annoyed.
2545,
she gasped.
The code to the wine cellar downstairs. 2545.
She had drawn some blood with her scrapes on the skin of Vega's hand.
2545,
she said again.
You can check. I can come with you. I'm not lying.
Vega didn't move or speak.
I gave her baby Valium to make everything easier,
said Mrs. Linsome.
I wanted to be kind.
This was her begging, thought Vega, but she didn't enjoy it. You're not coming with me, said Vega. She could feel her shudder, and then she heard the dribble of urine on the carpet, running down Mrs. Linsome's elegant pajama pants onto the floor like a puppy. Vega took the gun out of her eye and let go of her hair. She squatted to talk to her. Mrs. Linsome's eyes were wide and bloodshot. I'm not going to kill you, said Vega. I just wanted you to pee on yourself. Vega took the double restraints from her inside pocket. She grabbed Mrs. Linsome's wrist and pulled her to stand, which she did unstably, then led her to the piano. Sit, said Vega, bringing her hand down on Mrs. Linsome's shoulder. Mrs. Linsome's legs folded underneath her. Vega wrapped one cuff around Mrs. Linsome's wrist and pulled the strap, which clicked as she tightened it. Then she looped the other cuff around the piano leg and locked the strap, Mrs. Linsome's body lurching forward. How do I get downstairs? Said Vega, standing up. Mrs. Linsome looked very small on the floor, her legs crisscrossed awkwardly.
Through the kitchen, she said, her voice low. The white door to the right of the refrigerator.
Vega left her and went to the kitchen, hit the lights with her palm, and saw the white door. She walked to it and pressed the silver lever handle down and pulled it open. There was a staircase, well lit with wall sconces, and Vega stepped down, felt the air become cooler. At the bottom was a door, made of a knotty, unfinished wood. It was arched at the top and had a black iron handle, weather-sealed jambs in the frame. Something new, made to look old. Vega pushed the numbers into the keypad on the wall, and she heard the mechanism of the lock, ticking and snapping. She opened the door. The first thing that hit her was the smell. Cap raced through stoplights and signs down dark roads, one hand on the wheel, the other scrolling and dialing. Trainer, Junior, his neighbor Bosch. It would take too long to explain to 911 dispatch, who would send the fire department first. He left frantic short messages for them all, and then he remembered M was at the station, 15 minutes from Cap's house if you obeyed traffic laws. Cap? Said M, picking up right away. M, said Cap, swinging around a turn. The man who took Kylie Brandt is at my house with Nell, and he's armed. I can't explain. I'm 5 minutes out. Get some backup and meet me there. He couldn't control his breathing or the register of his voice. Felt like the words were being choked from his throat. I'm coming, said M, panting, running. And then, she's gonna be fine, Cap. Let's get her. Drive. M hung up, and Cap drove, finally reaching his neighborhood, past the playground where he'd taken Nell after being up all night on third shift. Higher, 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 she'd say on the big girl swing, legs pumping to spike the velocity. His arms would seize every time she went up, as he imagined her hands losing hold of the chains and her falling to the ground, smashing her nose and breaking bones, her screams echoing through his ears, though they hadn't even happened. Then he heard Jules's criticism. Just push her higher, Max. She's not glass. No,
he thought now. More fragile than glass. Skin thin as newsprint. He slowed on his block and parked across the street from his house. He got out of the car and ran to his lawn. There were no lights on inside, but the front door was open. Not wide. As he approached, he saw the broken frame, splintered. He drew the SIG from his belt and went around to his office entrance. He unlocked the door and stepped inside, closed the door quietly, and slid his shoes off. He padded through his office, the streetlight coming through the blinds, making fat stripes across the floor and furniture. The door connecting his office to the rest of his house was open, the way he'd left it. He came into the living room. Dark. Quiet. The strip over the dishwasher, the only light. Likeliest scenario, thought Cap. Linsome breaks the front door frame. Maybe muffles the nose of the gun and shoots the lock to keep it quiet. Nell doesn't hear it anyway because of the headphones she wears to fall asleep, listening to the rat-a-tat of snare drum lines because she said it got the more difficult cadences into her subconscious. So Linsome finds her in her room, asleep, and what? She's too old for his taste in terms of sexual assault. But would that stop him? Would he just kill her? No, said Vega in Cap's head. Too much still to lose. He went up the stairs, skipping over the creaky step. Then he was in the hallway, and he heard Nell's voice, hushed, talking. He covered his mouth so as not to gasp audibly with relief. He couldn't make out the words and couldn't guess at the situation. Did Linsome have the gun on her? Was he restraining her? There was no way to know. All Cap had was surprise. The only thing he could do was come in fast and keep his aim steady. He put his back against the wall and moved sideways. Sig pointed toward Nell's open door. He knew he just had to do it. Swing around, and if the shot was clear, take it.
So, should we try that, Press? He heard Nell say.
Cap pivoted into the room, leading with a SIG, arms straight. There was Nell in her desk chair, not tied up or visibly injured, and Press Linsome, standing, hovering close to her, a .45 in his right hand, hanging at his side until he saw Cap.
Dad!
Yelled Nell. Linsome jumped and put his arm around Nell's neck, stuck the .45 against her cheek. Cap felt every nerve ending in his body catch fire as he huffed breath through his nose. Linsome looked tired and shocked, his hands shaking. Nell's eyes were huge as they hunted Cap's, trying to tell him things. She gripped the arms of the chair. Her lips curled as she spoke.
"It's okay, Dad," she said, her voice eerily calm. "Press and I have been talking. Right, Press?"
Linsome didn't answer her, kept staring at Cap.
"He doesn't want to hurt me," said Nell, her voice cracking only a little. "He just wants to make sure his family's okay."
Cap kept the SIG pointed at Linsome's chest. Could he take the shot?
That's good, said Cap. Mr. Linsome, if you put the gun down right now, I can help you and your family. If you don't, I can't. It's just as plain as that.
It was difficult to tell if Linsome heard him. His hand still shook, the nose of the gun slipping around on Nell's cheek. Nell watched Cap, but didn't flinch. Cap
could not look at her. If he looked at her, he would make a bad decision.
"Why don't you tell him, Press?"
said Nell, sounding like a proud parent at the science fair.
"Tell my dad how far you and I came in 2 hours. All the stuff we talked about."
Linsome shook his head quickly.
"You tell him," he whispered.
"Okay," said Nell, swallowing air. "Okay, well, Press came in pretty upset when he woke me up. But then we got to talking. We all want the same thing."
She trailed off. Cap had to look at her. There were the streams of tears, one from each eye, following the bell shape of her cheekbones. Her eyes remained open and fierce, staring at Cap with a strangely familiar insistence.
"Don't fuck this up, Dad." "To feel safe,"
she said, like the air had been pulled out of her.
"Not to be safe,"
she added.
"To feel safe." Cap could not begin to think of how a 16-year-old had talked a psychopath out of killing her. But then again, this was Nell. And suddenly, the true loss of them all.
Ashley Cahill, Sydney McKenna, Kylie Brandt, hit him with the force of all the anthracite stuck underneath the foundation of his house. They would never get to be like Nell. They would never get to thrill and amaze and undo every stereotype of teenage girl for their parents. Or they would never get to torture and exhaust them, break curfew and drive drunk. But it didn't matter. Both outcomes were the tragedy. Cap felt the tears load up in his eyes, but he didn't dare blink. And then he didn't think he moved, but he must have. His elbow must have bent. The sig must have moved an inch left or right, because Linsome saw it. His face lit up with panic as he took the gun off Nell and fired at Cap, a wild pitch. Nell screamed. Cap heard the round sail past his ears, cut into the wall behind him, and Linsome came toward him, waving the gun. Cap fired and got his shoulder. Linsome reared back in shock.
"Dad! Dad!"
screamed Nell, out of the chair, kneeling on the floor. Cap was falling backward. He was losing his grip on the sig, but why? He looked at his hand and tried to squeeze the grip and the trigger and actually thought, "Why can't you hold on to it?" And then he felt the side of his head wet and cold and saw the blood, his blood, sprayed onto the old uneven panels of the wooden floor, and realized he'd been hit. Linsome ran, shoved Cap out of the way against the back wall of the hallway, and then he kept going, slowed and disoriented by the shot in his shoulder, hurtling down the stairs. Cap struggled to stand, and then Nell came to him and held his face in her hands.
"It's just your ear, Dad. He just got your ear. That's all,"
she said. As soon as she said it, Cap felt the blood surge to his ear, the whole thing humming like a harp.
"Come on,"
she said, putting the sig firmly into Cap's hand.
"We have to stop him."
Nell threaded her arms through his and pulled him up to stand. And once he locked his legs, he felt like he could walk, step by step. And they headed for the stairs, slow, and then fast. Cap heard one siren at first, and then another and another, stacked on top of one another like a symphony.
"Are you okay?"
Cap said, the words muted in his ears.
"I'm fine," said Nell. "Don't worry."
They watched Linsome stagger out the front door, and Cap almost fell down the last three stairs, but Nell held him up. They made it to the door, and then the porch, and they saw Linsome on the lawn. And there was M, getting out of his car with his gun drawn, aimed at Linsome, as the sirens grew louder and closer.
"Drop your weapon! Hands in the air!"
shouted M, advancing across the lawn. Linsome didn't react, perhaps didn't hear him. Four cruisers and two unmarked cars came from both the cross streets, lights spinning and sirens shrieking.
"Drop your weapon! Hands in the air!"
M yelled again. Linsome raised his gun, and M fired. Linsome stumbled back, hand on his side, dropped the gun, fell backward. Cap watched his eyes blinking once, twice, then stop. Nell pushed her face into Cap's shirt. He hugged her with one arm and set the SIG on the railing, caught M's eye, and pointed at him.
"You."
M pointed back. His face filled with a roiling energy.
"No. You."
Cars and vans kept coming. The street filled with every cop in town. Newsmen and their cameras. And one ambulance. Baby powder. The overwhelming perfume of it. Vega had no emotional response to baby powder, but knew other people did. It reminded them of babies. These same people talked about babies' cheeks and thighs, and their respective degrees of thickness, how these were marks of a healthy baby. The smell reminded them of this. Fat little bodies rolling around in the artificial dust of baby powder. Healthy. And not sick. Safe. The wine cellar was not a big room. 5 by 15. The long wall consisting of a floor-to-ceiling rack for the red, next to a refrigerator for the white. Both were empty. The air was moist. A small black humidifier whirring quietly next to the door. Pucks mounted across the ceiling cast faint spotlights. Then, in the corner, a toddler's bed. Vega recognized the size. She remembered visiting her brother a few years back, seeing her 3-year-old niece in one just like it. But on this one lay Kylie Brandt, too big for it, curled up on top of the blankets in a white nightgown. She was either dead or sleeping. Vega approached the bed and leaned down. The light was dim, but she saw it, the rise and fall of Kylie's chest. Her mouth was open 1/2 inch. Her breath was stale, but her skin smelled sweet and floral. "Kylie," said Vega, not too loudly. She didn't move or wake up. "Kylie?" Still she slept. Wasn't it Sleeping Beauty, Vega tried to remember, where the whole kingdom falls asleep with her? All of them drugged, frozen where they stood. The bakers kneading dough, the cobblers hammering shoes, Everyone. Not Denville, thought Vega. All of us are fucking wide awake forever. She placed her hand on Kylie's arm and said once more, Kylie? As soon as Vega touched her, she woke up with a sharp intake of air and jumped like a flea to the farthest corner of the bed. Her face looked like it did in the pictures, like the video in the ice cream shop, but was also now transformed into a strange sculpture that was not her, full of fear and drugs and trauma, stoned, but aware. It's okay, said Vega, regretting it instantly, knowing that was exactly what Press and Lindsay Linsome told her. Your mom, Jamie, sent me here to get you. Kylie shook her head.
She's dead. Mr. Linsome says she's dead, her and Bailey, said Kylie quickly, her voice raw,
the information by now rote. Vega bit her cheeks, so paralyzed by anger, she had to remind herself to speak. They lied. Your mom and Bailey are fine. They're waiting for you. She watched Kylie take this in, her eyes rushing around the room and back to Vega's. If you come with me, I'll take you to them, said Vega. Kylie shook her head violently now and cried,
No! 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 No!
She began to sob, but it was different from other sobbing Vega had witnessed, because Kylie made no effort to cover her contorting face as the tears came out, making noises like she was suffocating. Vega was reticent to touch her again, but had to bring her out somehow. Kylie, Kylie, listen. Just listen, she said. Kylie quieted to a long whimper. I'm here to protect you. They can't hurt you anymore.
But Mrs. Linsome said,
Kylie began, then stopped. What did she say? Said Vega. Tell me.
She said I was helping Cole. That he was gonna get Cole if I wasn't here.
Vega stood up straight now. He's not going to get Cole. Or you. Or anyone.
But he has a gun!
Kylie cried. Vega pulled back her jacket. So do I. Kylie stopped crying then and just blinked, a tremor still in her lungs as she breathed in and out. Let's go, said Vega. She backed up to give the girls some room. Kylie straightened out her legs. Now Vega could see how ridiculously small the toddler bed was for her. She was almost two sizes too long for it. Then she stood up and wobbled, uneasy on her feet. Vega held her by the shoulders. Okay, she said. Can you walk? Kylie nodded. She was only a few inches shorter than Vega. The white nightgown was too small also, the empire waist across Kylie's chest, the hem above her knees. Vega thought it was probably one of Cole's. Kylie looked toward the open door, uncertain. Vega went to it, nodded. Kylie came to her, slowly, learning to walk. Together they stepped outside the wine cellar to the foot of the stairs. They both looked up, toward the rectangle of light at the top. Vega put her arm around Kylie's shoulders, but didn't touch her. And they began to walk up, Kylie keeping pace with Vega on each step, arms at her sides. They reached the top of the stairs and were in the kitchen, and Kylie squinted at the light.
It's nighttime?
She asked. Yes, said Vega.
almost 4 in the morning. Vega led her out of the kitchen and toward the front door. She was not planning on involving Mrs. Linsome in their exit.
Kylie!
Mrs. Linsome called from the living room. Kylie's whole body jerked when she heard her name. Vega shook her head slowly, mostly to herself.
Let's go, she said to Kylie.
But Kylie peered around Vega, through the entryway, like someone trying to see how far ahead the traffic accident was. Then she stepped away from Vega, hands still at her sides, limply, and moved forward, around the oak table with the full flower arrangement, into the living room.
Do not let the skip run the show, Perry said in her head. You let the skip make any decisions. You are cooked cabbage.
But Kylie wasn't a skip. She was a girl looking to settle up. And for all Vega knew, the next time Kylie and Mrs. Linsome would see each other would be in a courtroom. This might be the last time. So Vega followed her. Mrs. Linsome was right where Vega had left her, crouched on the floor against the piano. Kylie was walking toward her.
Kylie,
said Mrs. Linsome weakly, her skin a washed-out yellow.
Kylie, I'm sorry you had to go through that, but you did the right thing.
Vega gripped her thumbs in her palms. Her imagination expanded with what she could do to Lindsay Linsome. Tell Kylie to wait in the car. Pick up the glass deer centerpiece and crush Mrs. Linsome's forehead. Smash the jaw. Crack the delicate bridge of the nose. When her free hand goes to her face to protect it, smash each finger, one by one, on the piano keys. Then make her play something. Then Kylie took the last couple of steps, so she was right over Mrs. Linsome. She leaned down and screamed. The sound was so shrill, so harrowing, Vega had to slap her hands over her ears. Mrs. Linsome could cover only one with her free hand, her eyes squeezing shut. Kylie had an enormous amount of air in her lungs, like she'd been accruing it for the past 7 days. Even though time in general was working a strange game on Vega, stretching and shrinking, the scream lasted and lasted. Her voice turned hoarse, and finally she stopped. Beads of tears had sprouted on her lashes from the release. She stood up straight and backed away. Mrs. Linsome stared at her, stunned. Kylie turned around to face Vega, her eyes vacant. Vega removed her jacket and held it out to her.
Come on. It's cold, she said.
Kylie wandered slowly to her, slid the jacket on, the sleeves long on her arms by an inch or two.
Mommy?
It was Cole calling from upstairs. They could not see her from where they stood.
Mommy, what was that?
Mrs. Linsome leaned as far as she could away from the piano, trying to stretch the cuffs.
Nothing, sweetie. Go back to bed. Everything's okay,
she called in a chirpy sing-song. Vega led Kylie to the entryway. Cole stood at the top of the stairs.
Kylie?
She said, half asleep.
Kylie lifted her hand and waved. Her face blank. Cole waved back. The confusion just beginning to cloud her eyes. Vega put her hand on Kylie's back and guided her to the front door. She turned back to Cole. Call 911. Everything's not okay. Cole started to open her mouth to ask more questions, looking like a little lost tourist. But Kylie was already out the front door, and Vega was right behind. Then they were out in the air, colder than when Vega had entered the house, flurries still twirling, dissolving on Vega's bare arms. Kylie was in a sort of sleepwalk, legs marching. Her eyes were open. She watched the ground a few feet ahead. "That's my car," said Vega, when they were close, pressing her key, unlocking the doors. As they walked, Vega pulled out her phone and texted Jamie, "I have Kylie. She is fine. Be there soon." She skipped over texts and messages from Kaplan, Junior, the bastard. They opened the doors and got in. Kylie buckled her seatbelt without having to be told and stared straight ahead. Alive, but dead, Vega thought. It was too soon to tell if she was like Christy Polonez. She won't be when she sees Jamie. Then she'll wake up, Vega found herself hoping. Vega started the car and drove out of the subdivision, past the field. She cranked the heat. "Tell me if you're too hot," she said to Kylie. Kylie didn't respond. Her hands were in her lap. Vega didn't need the GPS to find Jamie's parents' house anymore. She recognized the county road and the U.S. route, and then the side streets, the stores and the liquor distributor, the strip malls and the post office.
"What's your name?" said Kylie.
"Vega."
"Vega?"
"V-E-G-A," said Vega. "It's my last name."
"What's your first name?"
"Alice." Vega glanced at Kylie, who was thinking about it.
"There's a girl named Alice in my class," she said.
"Yeah," said Vega, thinking it would be good to keep Kylie talking. The more engaged she was now, the less likely it would be for her to reside in the shock state. It's becoming popular now. When I was a kid, I was the only Alice in my school.
"I'm not the only Kylie in my school. There's three of them. Of us."
"But you're the only Kylie Brandt," said Vega. Kylie was quiet, looking out the window. She was unsure of the point she was trying to make to the girl. "You're special?" Vega thought she would see right through that line of bullshit right away. She thought, after the last 7 days, Kylie would see through everything. The world now robbed of virtue. And worse, the potential of virtue. The swell of possibility gone. They were 2 blocks from Jamie's parents' house. Vega lingered at a stop sign, and a news van sped by them. Vega switched the hazards on. "Hey," she said, "are you listening right now?" Kylie nodded, still gazing out the window. "You're going to have a nice life. All this shit that's happened to you is over. It's not going to happen again. Your mom really loves you, and she's a good person. You're going to grow up and have a nice life. Get married and have kids and dogs if you want. Anytime you get sore about what happened to you, just think about that. And take this." Vega leaned to the glove compartment and popped it open, held out a card to Kylie. Kylie regarded it skeptically and then took it from her.
That's me, said Vega. Anyone bother you, or your sister or your mom, send me a note. I will get on a plane and come here and put them in the fucking earth.
Sound good? Kylie read the card, start to finish, then turned to Vega and nodded.
Good, said Vega.
She turned off the hazards and pulled out. As soon as she turned the corner on Jamie's parents' blog, she saw the throng of media, the vans with satellites and full camera crews. The street lit up like it was the middle of the day. Kylie peered through the windshield, nibbled her bottom lip.
I'm going to park as close as I can, and then we'll walk fast. They all know your name and will ask you questions, but don't talk to them and stay close to me, okay?
Okay.
Vega slowed. No one saw them yet. She parked halfway down the block and cut the engine, unbuckled her seatbelt.
You ready? She said to Kylie.
Kylie nodded.
Ready.
Vega got out and shut the door on her side, and one reporter, a blonde woman in a parka, turned her head and saw them.
It's them! She announced, giddy.
Vega went around to Kylie's side and opened her door as the crowd rushed to them.
Don't worry, I'm here, Vega said to her.
But Kylie may or may not have heard, because of the noise. You've seen the rest. You saw the footage running for 36 hours straight on CNN. Or you were forwarded a YouTube video. Or your friend or your mom put a link on Facebook. You watched. You clicked. Vega walks Kylie down the sidewalk with her arm around her. People and cameras and mics in their faces. Vega tilts her head to whisper in Kylie's ear. Kylie blinks a little at the lights but keeps her eyes ahead. The questions keep coming and are variations on the same. Did he hurt you? Where did they keep you? Were you tortured? Are you okay? The last is really an afterthought. Then you've seen the paint-by-numbers courtroom drawings of Lindsay Linsome on the stand, the tearful prison interview in which she describes how she crushed the Valium into glasses of orange juice for Ashley Cahill and Sydney McKenna before smothering them with pillows. And then the bodies were placed in heavy-duty garbage bags and buried in the woods on the Linsome's property in Hershey. The tabloids dub her Ice Queen. You've seen the program Mind of a Monster, the story of Preston Linsome's sordid childhood, during which he was likely repeatedly molested by a business associate of his father's. You've heard the whole story, but it's confusing. How Evan Marsh looked like a movie star, and John McKee looked like an old man's dead son. How Lindsay Linsome kidnapped three girls and dressed them up to look like her own daughter. All of them stand-ins for someone else. You've seen the long-awaited funerals of Ashley Cahill and Sydney McKenna, their parents burying the decomposed remains in small white coffins. You notice the mothers, one young and stunning in the way of a high school homecoming queen, the other old and spectral, with white hair and a dowdy black dress. You've seen the speeches made by Chief Traynor, praising his police, the FBI, the ingenuity of the private investigator team. You've seen him take many questions and answer only a few, saying the investigation is ongoing. We'll let you know when we have further information. You've seen the profile of Max Kaplan and seen his professional comeback celebrated, if for no other reason than his tousled charm. The only thing you remember about Alice Vega is the image of her in a short-sleeved shirt, holster with gun crossing her back, her face bruised and bandaged as she steers Kylie up the path. Then Jamie Brandt, probably meaning to watch at the window until they come inside, but when she sees her daughter, can't control herself, bursts through the front door and runs, in a cropped football pajama top and shorts, barefoot. Kylie sees her and runs too, both of them toward each other so fast you think they will collide and knock each other unconscious. But they don't. They know what to do. Kylie jumps into Jamie's arms, even though she is nearly as tall as her mother, and Jamie is frail, but doesn't budge under the weight. You can just barely see Jamie's face, because the cameras aren't allowed on the property. They have to stay at the curb. Her eyes are closed. She is crying. They go inside, and Alice Vega follows. It is all familiar to you by now. Chapter 20. The doctor was a woman in her 50s, hair dyed auburn with gray roots. She was short and a little overweight and had small padded hands like a baby. Cap watched them while she picked up and put down various tools to examine the stitches on his ear, which the ER doctor had sewn. Nell stood in the corner of the room by the door. Cap was not in pain. They'd given him acetaminophen with codeine, and it was working. He didn't feel his ear, but he was also fighting to keep his neck straight and his eyes open. The good news is there's no damage to the ear canal or any of the vasculature of the outer ear, said the doctor, facing him, still holding the otoscope. Bad news is he shot off part of the helix. This, she said, running her finger along the top curve of her ear. So you've lost about half an inch off the top, which, if you like, you can reconstruct surgically after the stitches are removed from the laceration. Thanks, Doc, said Cap, hoping the words came out fully formed. What do you think about me going home? I've been here a long time. I have to talk to Dr. Muncy, who did your stitches, and then I'll discharge you. No more than an hour. You have someone to drive you home? She said, turning to Nell in the corner. Nell said they would figure it out, and they all said thank you, and the doctor left. How you doing, Bug? Said Cap. She came up to him and put her arms around his neck.
Okay, she whispered into his hair. They said I should go to an ENT for the ringing.
Good, said Cap. We can go together.
And to a psychiatrist for this.
She stepped back from him and held her arm and hand out straight. Her hand trembled, a miniature diving board.
We can go together to that, too, said Cap.
They stood there for a while, with Nell leaning her head on his, Cap listening to the sound of her breathing. He let his eyes close and pictured a soft, foamy tide rolling up on the sand. Sun, seagulls, the whole thing.
Let's go, Nell.
He opened his eyes and there was Jules in the doorway. He hadn't seen her in a year or so, Nell traveling back and forth between them unaccompanied. She had let her hair grow long, Cap noticed, and was coloring it, too, her natural deep brown, almost black. He realized how much Nell looked more and more like her as she grew. The cheeks, the eyes, the dark, expressive eyebrows. Gorgeous, elegant creatures, both of them. Brunette giraffes. Come on, Nell, she said quietly. Let's go get some sleep. Nell pulled away from Cap and looked him in the eyes.
Let's try a week without physical injury. Deal? She said.
Cap smiled.
Deal.
He hugged her once more and kissed her hair. She walked toward her mother, and Jules came forward to say something to Cap. She wore a long wool sweater, jeans and boots, and hadn't slept, eyes heavy, arms tightly crossed in front of her as if to prop herself up.
Are you okay? She said.
She wasn't looking at him, staring at his lap.
Yeah, Jules, I'm fine.
Now she looked at him and pursed her lips, trying not to cry. She stepped closer, up to his face.
I'm so pissed at you right now, she whispered. But I'm glad you're okay.
Then she kissed him on the forehead. It was so quick he wasn't sure it had really happened afterward. He saw Nell grinning in the doorway.
Let's go, Professor, she said to her mother.
Jules turned quickly and went to Nell.
Text if you need anything, Dad, she said.
Yeah, said Cap. Then they were gone.
Cap glanced at his phone, which was almost out of juice and overrun with texts and voicemails. He didn't have nearly enough energy to navigate them, so he turned his phone off and leaned back on the pillows. He shut his eyes, and his mind sailed along in drugged exhaustion. Again with the small beach and the soft tide. He couldn't recall ever seeing such a beach. Maybe near his parents in Florida? Except that they had to be gulf waves. The Atlantic would push you over if you got in past your knees. Still, it would be nice to try that water. Warm if not clear. Lying on your back, letting the salt push you up. Then he had a feeling he wasn't alone. He opened his eyes, and Vega was there now, at the foot of his bed, watching him.
Are you really there?
He asked, genuinely unsure.
I think so, she said.
Cap sat up and forced himself to wiggle his big toes and make fists, all the old tricks he used to do on a long shift to keep himself awake.
How's your ear? Said Vega. It's fine, he said. I mean, my career as an ear model is over, but my hearing's fine.
Vega nodded, the littlest squiggle of a smile on her lips.
How are you? He said.
I'm fine, she said. I'm here to give you a ride.
That would be great. Thanks, he said.
Her hands were clasped in front of her, one wrapped around two fingers of the other, and it made her look very small and young to him suddenly. He felt like he could finally picture her as a kid. For the past week she had seemed to him one of those people who was born as a 30-year-old.
Then, I have to get going, she said. Back to California. I have another job.
What? That's it?
He said. He felt short of breath, blood rushing out of his head.
Trainer and the feds are going to need us for post-mortem, for paperwork, he said quickly.
I can do it all online, she said.
Have you told them that?
No, she said. They're busy.
What about media?
I never do media. Cap swung his legs over the side of the bed and prepared to stand. He wiped his eyes.
So, that's it? He said again.
She stepped closer to him. I'll be back soon, she said. Dina Macht's father wants to press charges against me. So does this guy I hit in the face with a wrench the other day.
Then you can't leave, said Cap. You'll be a skip.
Vega rolled her shoulders. I'm not worried about it. They can extradite me if they want. Or send me an invoice. Whatever. Cap pressed his tongue against the roof of his mouth. The 1,004 things he wanted to say to her. Foremost among them, please don't leave. Let's have dinner. Could I just run two fingers along the line of your hip? We are bound together by what has happened here. Please don't leave. She came closer to him. I'll be back soon, she said quietly. She wasn't looking at him. He liked to think she couldn't, that it would be too overwhelmingly emotional for her. But really, he didn't know. What he did know, he knew she liked to break down service rifles to relax, and that she liked tea instead of coffee. Her mother died when she was young,
and her mentor died a few years back, and that seemed to follow her around. She had a high tolerance for pain.